Accession number 17623, Henry Watson, reel 14.
Mr. Watson, reel 14. Tell me about this English woman that found her way into the camp, Mr. Watson.
No, she didn't find her way to the camp. She was living in Muhlberg. But someone from one of the working parties that used to go out daily from the camp to work for different firms or work in the fields, what have you, brought word back in that there was a lady out there. So inquiries were made and were found it was Mrs. Barrington. And they called the lad in the camp Barrington. She had the wind up. She had no husband to protect her. And the Russians were getting a bit close. What could we do? I could do nothing. I said I knew nothing at all about it. But one of their half lads, Andy Granger, who died 2-3 years ago, was a very good friend of mine. He used to be often in my hut, and he just lived at Newcastle. And he was the one that took her under his wing. And Andy used to try and tell the tale to different ones, but there's nobody was very much interested in it. Thought it was, you know, another big story. But they kept her in the Red Cross parcels office, which was, in that case was in the camp. They kept her in there, and a bed was made up in there, and she was dressed as a soldier, and I don't suppose you'd have known any difference. She eventually marched out with us. Well, not marched, we just walked out. She eventually walked out and went along to Muhlberg, I can't remember the place, I just forget the name of it for the moment, but we crossed the Elbe, and we thought we'd be safe there, because whilst the Germans had that big battle outside the camp, and the Russians had taken over everything, we'd been 3 weeks under Russian control, and there was no sign of us being picked up by anybody at all. So we thought we'd go to the other side of the Elbe, that's where the Americans were supposed to be. But when we got there, the Ruski was still there, and we got put in some SS barracks. And we were there for nearly another 3 weeks, and the Russians wouldn't let us go. They wanted as many Russian prisoners as there was British, and they were firmly convinced that the Americans had taken Russians prisoner, and that we weren't fighting on the same side. They honestly thought they were on their own. When you got on talking to one or two of them, you know, through German, one or two had learned German, a plane coming across, it was a Russish plane, that's all there was. There was no such thing as a British mosquito or anything like that. There was mosquitoes flying about, not mosquitoes, Spitfires were flying around, but they'd sent them out, they'd taken them out. That's when the Russian convoys, where so many got knocked off on the sea, with the submarines knocking the Russian convoys off. They were taking the stuff out to Russia. But no, they wouldn't have it. It was all made in Russia. They were going to march on London, One of my pals says, he'll get run over with a bloody tram.
So the lady was with you on this marching.
She was with us all the time. And she came back. She would come back to Worthing, I think. And then that was the end of that. But my son-in-law said there'd been a woman in our prison camp. That's out of it, hell. So yes, he says, the newspapers have been looking for her. They're wanting a story. And they hunted and hunted, and it fell flat at the finish because they couldn't find her. She was in Consett. She was living in Consett.
Just a few miles from here.
Yeah. So they... That's when things start to look up from that point of view. There's Mrs. Barrington.
And there's a photograph of one of your reunions.
One of the reunions.
So she's still alive today, is she?
No, she's dead. She's dead. Our son went to America, and I think he's died as well. I have some photographs of her looking at the radio. There again, they're in Durham.
You mentioned that the camp office. What was its role in the camp organisation?
Well, just organising the camp in general. If there was any parade for to be done, or some hut wanted to go at the De Louser, another one wanted to go and have a bath, and there was some Germans wanted some. The lads to go out to the forest and seek some timber, carry timber in. Just a general maintenance and well-being of the camp. Organising the Red Cross parcels, organising the personal parcels, that's the ones that were sent from home. Generally looking after things.
And this was run by the prisoners themselves?
The top man was Snowy Myers. He was a senior NCO. He was in the Canadian Air Force, and he was called, his title was Man of Confidence. So it's the man we had confidence in, and he met the Geneva people that came to see the camp, the Geneva Convention people. Any complaints? He had to put it to them. The Germans has to be there and all. And generally he was dog's body, but did a good job. He came across 2 or 3 years ago. Well, it'd be more. Before 6 years ago he came across to the reunion. But he's popped his clog since. The trouble is that there's a lot of us are on that age group.
And the Red Cross people who came to check out the camp, did they get the opportunity to come round and talk to you?
Oh, yes, yes.
With a German present?
Yes, yes, yes. Came and talked to you and want to know if you've got any complaints. You had to substantiate them. I mean, you're not going to just come up with a whole lot of guff. You had to be able to substantiate what you're complaining about. And they took it all down and... I suppose they were going away joyfully and do damn all, but the effort was there.
Mail was coming to you in the camp? You've mentioned parcels.
Mail came to us, yes, but near the end, of course, you just didn't get it. It didn't bother.
Well, the communications would be breaking down.
Yeah, yes. Because the highlight, well, one of the highlights that I remember in the camp was one night... We heard the drone of planes coming. And we learned on the radio 2 nights after, it was a 1,000 bomber raid. And it went up to Berlin. And the reason that I remember the name of Elbe so much is because the planes used to come across and turn left at the Elbe and shoot off at right angles. At this bend, there's a big bend in the Elbe, and they turned there and went north for Berlin. And there was this dark, and all of a sudden the sky was lit with bunny lights. Oh, hey, howie lads, let's have a look out here. We weren't supposed to be out, but there was no jerrys about. And these flares, as they happened to be, came down, no lighting up all around our camp. Oh, it was Guy Fawkes night, lovely. We had a free Guy Fawkes show. When we looked across at the RAF compound, they were just about trying to dig through the concrete with their fingernails to get hidden. We didn't know till the next day there were marker flares. It was the Pathfinder lot that had dropped the marker. We were getting chased with night fighters, and they just dropped the flares and got the hell out of it. And the flares all dropped around our camp. Oh, we didn't know what a good job.
But they didn't bomb it.
No. There was one lad that I know, that I knew, got killed, got hit with a shell of a one coming down, firing at a German, straight through the roof, and he was lying in his bed. He'd had it.
Did you get that was one incident, obviously. Were there other incidents when you were either bombed by Allied aircraft or machine gunned?
Well, we used to go out occasionally into a wood that once, at some time or other, had been strafed or something, but all the trees had all burned. They were all standing. There were coniferous, and the greens would just go woof, leaving the stem. And that would be anything up to, what, just 7 or 8 foot tall, just little Christmas trees, really. And we just pulled them all by the roots and got ourselves as much as we could carry into a bundle on our shoulders, and we took it back to the camp for to keep the fires going. And it was disconcerting. One time we were up there, and my God, the shells were landing amongst us. They weren't exploding, but the shells were coming in, woof. There was a place not very far away from there, which was the munitions factory or something. They used to fire at night, testing the ammunition out, and you could see the tracers going up. And, there were probably some of them that were coming down. Not the same ones, of course, but they were firing in the area where we were. No one was hit, there's no one hurt. And then there was another party went to do seek timber, and there was a train coming. There was also a load of RAF planes coming, fighter bombers, and they bombed the train, and it was full of explosives. Where that thing went off with bangs and crackles for 24 hours. It set the whole damn train afire.
You were there when Dresden was got its particularly heavy rain.
Yes.
Did you know about it?
Yes.
Could you see it from where you were?
No. Could see the flare up, but it was too far to walk.
Did the guards show in their behaviour and their way they treat you when things like this happened, and as you say, their own families were being bombed?
They didn't like it, to say the least, but as I said before, if he could catch one person, one guard on his own and talk to him, he'd say, you know, they've bombed such and such, I've lost this, that and the other, I wish to hell they would stop it, and why don't you go home? And we said, hey, we want to go home, but you won't let us.
What did you do for Christmas? You'd have two Christmases there, 43 and 44, 45, three Christmases. No, for two Christmases there.
Well, the second one was a bit of a lame duck, because there was no parcels. It was damn cold. And you just made the best of it. There was one thing that we did have in the camp that I haven't mentioned, was the music, concerts, what have you. We had one hut set aside as a theatre. And they redesigned the inside of it, the lodge. It had a sloping floor. It was a level floor. They made a sloping floor and a stage, curtains. And there was an electrician in there. And they used to put on stage shows and good shows. I've seen the names of the things many a time. The Man Who Came to Dinner, I'm forgetting the names of them now.
There'd be stage shows of the time, though, the period that you were living
in. The time, yes. The Red Cross, I think, sent some of the scripts, and they copied the, they acted the script out. And then there was a band, an Anglo-English dance band, because there was a lot of Americans in the camp. There was a whole unit of Americans walked into the camp. The whole the battalion had walked in. They got taken prisoner one morning. It was at the Ardennes push. Jerry got round that lot and just whipped them all in. Well, there were some good musicians amongst them, and some of them had instruments. We had some instruments. I probably bought some, I couldn't tell you. But had a bloody good cracking dance band. So they had that. And then the shows used to go to the Empire. The theatre was called the Empire. And was one cigarette admission or something like that. Remembering that a cigarette was a quid. And then we had the hut shows. So there were maybe 10, 15, 20 blokes in a group would put on a hut show. That's, you know, anything goes in a hut show. Oh, dear me, yes. And there's still some of the phrases used. Though they just didn't qualify for the theatre because they weren't high enough up the social scale, sort of style. But on the theatre stuff, for all the... There was only blokes in there. There was no women. There was nothing untoward, no bad language, no innuendos. It was clean all the way through. The way it had to be. They decided on that when it started. So it couldn't hurt anybody's feelings. So the priests used to come as well.
Germans invited?
Well, Germans used to come, yes. Yeah, come watch the shows.
And did any of the other nationalities, prisoners, come to it? Well, probably had their own arrangements.
I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say they would have their own hut shows and what have you. But the hut shows used to go around, you know, visiting hut after hut after hut and put the shows on, and they were well taken with. Another thing we had was lectures. You get someone who was, well, any trade or profession, it could speak. He would give a lecture on his trade. I had one there was an undertaker, and used to collect all the bodies that for the police, you know, used to be on for the police. And he had some very funny tales to tell, that fella, Londoner. I used to tell Ward Dale the life of a beekeeper. Should have had more sense. But I could talk about the life of a bee. I knew what made it tick. It went on all right, but I don't much other work to do.
And you've already mentioned, of course, that there was a very wide range of courses which the men took.
There was a wide range of... They were all in the afternoon, morning and afternoon, not after tea at night.
Were there church services on a Sunday?
Yes, yes. You used to sometimes get a... There again, it's in the museum at the moment. There's some photographs of church services. One was on the football pitch, the Roman Catholic one, and my God, there were some fellas there at this service. And I was talking about photographs. I was very friendly with a fella called Terry Hunt, who died a few years ago. Terry was a Gorman British cameraman, and they were flying him out to photograph the bombing of Philips Works, Philips Electrical Works in Holland. And he wasn't in the Air Force, so they gave him an Air Force uniform. All flying personnel were sergeants or above. They gave him his three tapes, and they recorded him in the books as a member of the Air Force, although he wasn't. He was a civvy. And his job was to photograph this thing, but they never got that far. He got brought down, shot down. So, had he been in civvies, he'd have been shot, his spy. But he wasn't in civvies, he was in RAF uniform. He had a RAF number. Everything was as it had to be. So, he was in the prison camp. Now, he got a hold of a camera from somewhere, and I never asked him. But I used to go with him, acting as a cover, to take photographs. And I have a whole bunch of them. I'll be in Durham and I'll take these photographs of different things in the camp, and that shows some of the church services. They often had a church service in the theatre on the winters, Sunday morning in the theatre.
Was religion important to you for helping to get through these long experiences in camp or camps?
I'm sorry.
Did you have a religious feeling? Strong
no.
religious feelings?
No, not to me. I used to go to the choir when I was a kid, Sunday school, strong religious. And I went to Aldershot, and I was on a church parade, and I marched there with the rest of the whole lot, and I listened to what the vicar had to say, and I thought to myself, well, I said, if the German vicars are saying the same as him, they will be, he'll not know whose bloody side he's on. So they won't let them sort themselves out, this can get stuffed. And I never went to another church service. When I see the way the war was run, what happened to all those Jews, the gypsies, they weren't all Jews, there was German gypsies, there was a whole lot. Anybody that was not quite the full shilling, they all got the knock. And I thought, well, I'm sorry, but there can't be a Christian, I can't be a God. All right, I lead as good a life as I can. I'll do no one any harm. I'll go out of my way to do them a good turn. But I'm afraid I don't go to church. And I've had arguments with the local vicar. He and I were great pals. Best of pals, our local vicar, he's just gone away. Best of pals. He appreciates my feelings. I'm a very good friend of the Catholic priest. I'm not a Catholic, Church of England, if you want anything like that. I've been to, I'll go to weddings, christenings and funerals. So that's what I do. I'm sorry if I disappoint you.
Did you have a choir amongst your theatrical talents in the camp?
There would be, but I couldn't shoot coal, never mind sing, so I kept out the way.
Did the Germans themselves, I'm thinking of course of the guards, did they celebrate Christmas whilst you were there?
Well, if they did, it was walking around the compound with a rifle or a dog, and the other ones would be off home on leave.
Overall, at the time that you were in the German camp, did the Germans treat you as well as, I suppose, as prisoners of war you could be expected?
Well, treat is not the operative word, but they were fair. They were fair. I always said that if you behaved like a soldier, you got treated as a soldier. Behave like a slob and he'd treat you like one. I've got no fault to find with them that way.
You mentioned roll calls. That was the one early in the morning.
Aye. And one night.
And how did they count you? Similar to the Italians, fives or whatever it was?
Similar like that, just in groups. And one went round counting them.
Were there deliberate attempts to annoy them or upset them?
Well, the rough were the lads that did that. They used to work themselves something horrible. There was no sense in it. All right, if it had an end result, fair enough, I'd be all for it. But it had no result. Say this once over. I got a load of stuff. I got some bagatelle boards. What the hell I wanted bagatelle board for, I don't know. But when I pulled the back off it, there was a coil of wire in it. Well, I got some more bagatelle boards, didn't I? And I was able to supply the tunnel with electric wiring bulbs for to light it up. Incidentally, we had a tunnel. It was similar to one last night. There was nobody got out. There was a bloody tractor went in it. I wasn't in on that, but I knew that it was there. And I used to help the escape committee in different things, especially from the theatre side, you see, clothing and things like that. So well, the RAF used to do daft tricks. For instance, once, I mean, Jerry knew that we had a radio in the camp. I believe there was one in the RAF compound as well as in ours. And they got a lump of wire from somewhere and they start feeding it amongst all the beds. Well, as I've described the sleeping quarters, it was horrendous, all them beds together. They wound it round the bottom of some, round the tops of others, under and over and through, and they used all this wire up. And at the end, there was a little tin. Jerry found it, left it conspicuous, sticking up so he could find it. Found his bit of wire. So they set to digging. They just dug the whole damned hut up. And then when they found the tin, there was a little notice in it that said, Nixed, NIXT. Nothing.